Blog Talk Radio.
This is Crown Talking Drum, and the views and opinions expressed on the Crown Talking Drum Radio Network are solely those of the hosts, guests, and callers. These views and opinions do not represent those of the Crown Talking Drum Radio Network, its management, hosts, or advertisers. Thank you for listening to Crown Talking Drum.
Good evening. Welcome to Poetry with Flavor. This is your host, Miss Lucy. Two rules to follow. Respect your elders, meaning me. And remember what your mother told you. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything. And I'm going to add one more statement, and this is hopefully will help you understand my presentation better. I am at a stage in life where my mind has a mind of its own. So if some things sound confusing, they're just as confusing to me. Well, I'm going to start with the Harlem Renaissance because we've been doing it in bits and pieces and never get to the end of it. But I'm glad it happened that way because as I was sharing it, I realized that there was a lot that I left out and that what I wrote didn't really seemed to get across the excitement of the Harlem Renaissance, the impact of the Renaissance. And so I have been fooling with this thing for 2 weeks now. I've been adding new bits and pieces. So it's still a work in progress. And but hopefully you'll understand it and hopefully you'll be able to get a vision of the importance of the Harlem Renaissance, the excitement of the Harlem Renaissance, and so here we go. Okay, for those who have forgotten, the Harlem Renaissance began with the movement of Southern blacks moving north and west to get away from the restrictions of being black in the South, and no economic situation was non-existent. And so moving north and west was a move of hope to find a better way of life. Okay. So the Great Migration is where we'll begin, which most of you know started at the end of World War I. The Great Migration saw the movement of Southern blacks to the North and West. Some walked, others drove, millions joined in, filled with hope for a better life. Their destinations, New York, Chicago, Detroit, and points further west. The scene. It's called Jungle Alley between Lenox and 7th, where highbrow got wild and low. Lenox and 7th crossed 133rd Street, where night spots lined the blocks. Swanky nightclubs and food joints for hungry palates were opened all night. Lenox Avenue was a bustling thoroughfare, the place to be for nightlife. running parallel to 7th Avenue that some called Heaven's Gate. Turn page. Miss Chili's nearby was serving good fried chicken on 133rd Street. Numbers your pleasure. Runners on every corner collecting receipts. If you need a buzz, 25 cents gets you 2 marijuana rolls. The happenings. Heidi, heidi ho, the Savoy was tops. Cab Calloway was the man. Cab had double swagger, smooth moves, and slinging that hair, sporting tails and a top hat. He'd get to prancing, his baton frantically waving. Everyone joined the revelry. Dance floor had no elbow room. The Lindy Hop and Snake Hips were danced like no tomorrow. They'd be stomping at the Savoy, 140th and 141st Streets on Lenox Avenue, raising the roof from the floor up. Savoy, not your case? Hundreds of joints to choose from. Head over to 7th Avenue. At the corner of 135th Street, marquee reads, Small's Paradise, three shows nightly. Small's Speakeasy had cafe au lait women, Charleston dancing waiters. Small's clientele freely mingled with Harlemites and moneyed whites. Not without an underbelly, the mob-owned Cotton Club and Connie's Inn catered to whites. Entertainers like Duke Ellington and Ethel Waters had segregated audiences. On occasions, blacks with celebrity status could gain entry. Uptown Manhattan was the place to be, open to high life and low life and all. Intoxicating, vibrant rhythms exploding, Harlem had it all. Artists, writers, poets, businessmen, lawyers, doctors were drawn to the happenings. Thinkers, politicians were clamoring for a taste. Of newfound freedom, Harlem ushered in freedom of expression, freedom of thought, freedom in behaviors. The character, Harlem After Dark, sizzled with gin, jazz, spin, sex, and silent exploration. Gay men and lesbians, unencumbered by the law, celebrate who they are. Gladys Bentley was a notorious lesbian who owned the Clam House. The main attraction at the Clam House was Body Butch Gladys Bentley. Gladys wore a tux and a top hat to perform her own risque lyrics. She was 300 pounds and wore short, slick back hair, and her alto voice was strong. No one came close to tickling the ivories like her. Nobody could sit still. She attracted a huge gay following, openly flirting on stage. Mom's Mabley ruled the Ubangi Club, a gay spot that was hotter than hot. The joints were jumping, people moving and grooving from dusk to well past morn. Harlem Renaissance ushered in an explosion of rebellious fashion. Women's necklines dipped and hemlines rose as free-flowing fabrics moved with the latest dance craze. Men won the fashion catwalk with suits so exaggerated They had their own name. The Zoot Suit, paired with shoes and hats the same color. Hats with brims so wide it defined personal space, like an umbrella opened wide. Mother of the blues, Ma Rainey, pioneered the genre, gaining mass appeal. Ma made 100 recordings with Paramount, taking blues mainstream. Ma Rainey flaunted her bisexuality with overt lyrics. Thousands came to hear, frenzied by her style of horse-haired wigs and gold-tooth smile. She sang with daring. Ain't nobody caught me. Sure got to prove it. With every note sung, the audience groaned and moaned right along. While I'm trying to turn this page, I'll just say that the laws at the time were strictly enforced, and new laws were made because the Harlem Renaissance was a place. In fact, I actually think that saying they have today, whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, I think it originated in the Harlem Renaissance. Because in those blocks where all this activity was going on, all of the entertainment and so forth that was going on, rules went out the door. Let's see. The neighborhood. Harlem's tenements, set in a 50 blocks long and 7 blocks wide area. Not everyone who lived in Harlem was wrapped with the late night goings on. Drunks could be found on any corner, fried to the hat, squatting and upchucking. Dusty butt prostitutes were handling their business without any shame. Juke joint pleasure houses were scattered incognito throughout the neighborhood. Residents were stacked on top of each other, often sharing rooms. Even those with degrees held the most menial of jobs, making it hard to pay rent. Rent parties were held to pay the landlord on time. People paid to enter. People paid to dine. Each room offered a pleasure. Some would blow your mind. The interlopers. Permeating the air, Harlem's electricity sent signals downtown. Throngs of upper-crust whites made frequent secret visits to partake in the ambiance. Many were closeted gay men and women, living a hushed double life, looking for carnal encounters to explore their sexuality. Some became obsessed, mesmerized by the culture. They became patrons. White patrons provided open doors to the establishment money and influence Carl Van Vechten. He helped to publish Langston Hughes's first book, The Weary Blues. Although married, he was overtly homosexual inside Harlem's walls. Carl loved everything Harlem, but was eventually banned after writing a book called Nigger Heaven. His preoccupation with all things Harlem led to soirees in his home. Carl Van Vechten was Harlem's greatest supporter, chronicling its story. Harlem's magnetism attracted luminaries from the Great White Way. Broadway writers and producers savored the songs and rhythm. Berlin and Gershwin often visited the clubs and venues of Harlem. They took samplings home of dance style and beats that influenced their writings. Irving Berlin hired Ethel Waters for $1,000 a week. Waters soon was seen on stage and the movie screens, a star of high regard. Irving Berlin showed his love for Harlem by composing Harlem on My Mind. The Niggerati. The Niggerati, a term that was coined by Czar Neale Hurston, were literary elites. Harlem nurtured County Cullum, Langston Hughes, Alain Locke, and many others. The new Negro era. Du Bois, talented 10th, sought to uplift the race. Hughes' secret remains, whether he was or wasn't. It changes nothing at all. His writing style challenged the accepted Euro forms, capturing folk lingo. Okay. Parties became regular events held on Saturday. But name of the game was Get That Money. I'm going to stop it. We'll only have one more part, and I'm going to have to save that because this is page that I just turned to is one of the pages that I was adding to, and I have just scribbled all over it. So we'll hold that till then. But I hope that you got a good sense of what the Harlem Renaissance was all about, how electrifying it must have been, that even when it comes to, when its heyday comes to an end around 1929 or during the Great Depression, even today, Harlem is still looked upon with high regard and high favor. Everybody wants to go to Harlem when they go to New York. So I don't believe the Renaissance has really stopped. It's just taken another turn. And Harlem is still producing the creative culture of Black people. All right. Sorry about the pages. You know I turn a lot of pages. I didn't say anything about, I usually say something about what's going on in the news, but it's just so awful today. I didn't feel like regurgitating that unnecessary. I know everybody knows we're living in chaos right now, but I did, I found a poem. I have the complete collected poems of Maya Angelou. And this poem actually is the first time I read it. Was earlier today, and I said I'm going to read it tonight. But anyway, because I think it speaks to all the chaos that's going on, not just, it's called Georgia's Song, but it really could be applied to any state, city, county right now. This is by Maya Angelou. I don't know the date of it, but the copyright of her book is 1994. We swallow the odors of southern cities. Fat bag boiled to submission. Tender evening poignancies of magnolias and the great green smell of fresh sweat. In southern fields, the sound of distant feet running or dancing, and the liquid notes of sorrow songs, waltzes, screens and French quadrilles float over the loom of Georgia. Sing me to sleep, Savannah. Clocks run down in terror's halls, and dusty flags droop their unbearable sadness. Remember our days, Savannah. Oh, the blood-red clay, yet still with ancient wrongs, and Abena singing her Creole airs to Macon. We long days for winter evenings and a whitened moon and the snap of controllable fires. Cry for our souls, Augusta. We need a wind to strike sharply, as the thought of love betrayed can stop the heart. An absence of tactile romance, no lips offering succulence, nor eyes rolling, disconnected from a Sambo face. Dare us new dreams, Columbus. A cool new moon, a winter's night, calm blood, sluggish, moving only out of habit. We need peace. Oh, Atlanta, oh, deep and once lost city, chant for us a new song of southern peace. That's Maya Angelou, called A Georgia Song, which I thought my interpretation fit right in with longing for better time. Let's see. I wanted to read one of Langston Hughes, probably his most famous poem. I don't know, it might be Mother to Son, but can pull it up. People, wait a minute, I'm scrolling on this thing. People think it's called A Dream Deferred, but the actual title of the poem is Harlem. And so I'm trying to scroll. I'm no good at any of this stuff. Hold on, please. Okay. The title is Harlem. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat or crust on crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it's just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? I mean, I can't think of a better description of the Harlem Renaissance that Langston Hughes wrote. It's about the hopes and dreams of millions of blacks who would try on a daily basis to overcome the challenges and obstacles and the handicap of being black, of being restricted to the point where you can't feel, you can't breathe, and yet you have so much talent, so much knowledge, so much to offer the world. That was the hope of the Harlem Renaissance, which I think it accomplished its goal. And still is. Again, that was The title is not A Dream Deferred. The title is Harlem. Okay. You know, I'm flipping again, folks. Sorry about that. So we'll pick up with the last part of the Harlem Renaissance that I wrote about, which will be how its heyday lost its shine and what was happening in the country that brought it to a so-called end. Okay. I'm sorry, folks. I'm flipping through pages, which I shouldn't be. My mind has a mind of its own. Okay. Hold on. I have books and papers and still don't have what I need in front of me, but sorry about that. Okay. Okay. I'm going to do a few, as you know, repeats, because it's not like I've written a million poems, but we'll do a few reviews. Here we go. Let's see. Let's do Harry's Afro Hut. And most of you know the black barbershop is a safe haven where black men, black boys, to let down their hair, to talk about all that challenges them, all that uplifts them. It's a brotherhood inside that barbershop. This was written about Harry's Afro Hut, which was in Baltimore, and Mr. Willie Harry, the owner, not just the owner, he helped to train and give young black barbers training space and, to perfect their craft so that they could go on maybe even open their own barbershop. But it became an iconic place in Baltimore because so many of the barbers there came through Harry's Afro Hut. Harry's Afro Hut in Baltimore, where the brothers can be brothers. No shooting and button heads. Brothers be talking, sharing, and bonding instead. Shoring up their manhood against the bullshit outside the door that for lesser men would kill the life spirit inside. From miles around and across the state, they came in droves to escape from the daily emasculation of whitey's hate. At Harry's, the facade comes off like the brothers' draws on a red-hot date. The transition is as smooth as the geometrical lines and fades they be getting. Mayors, doctors, Poe and Average brothers, uneducated and intellectuals, be sitting side by side, conversing, righting the wrongs of a world that would consume them. And all the while the brothers be role modeling for the little bros that's waiting to have their due style sleek, proud and cool, as they watch and listen to the incomparable logic and strength of the black man, not seen or heard on television because of society's fear of revealing truths that would weaken the man's unholy grasp on the world if all were told. So I pray that Harry's Afro Hut, like the pyramid, stands forever, and the barbers shadowing tall as pharaohs, images of intellect, strength, and beauty that cannot be wrenched from the minds of generations to come. That's Harry's Afro Hut, where brothers come out fades tall and chest high, and the revolution continues. On my wall over here, right across from me, I'm actually looking at a picture of my grandpa. This picture is this is 2022, 100 years older. My grandfather, my grandmother, and my mother as a baby sitting on my great-grandmother's porch in Wetumpka, Alabama. And the reason I stopped to mention it, as I'm reading Harry's Afro Hut, I'm looking at my grandfather's haircut, and he's got a high-top fade. So, you know, like they say, there's nothing new under the sun. That photograph's over 100 years old, and that hairstyle is in style today. Okay. Love that photograph. Okay, just flipping through. So why is chocolate always the favorite flavor of the month? You say the bad guy wears a black hat and never, not ever, let a black cat cross your path. That things sold illegally are called black market. And your brother is a black sheep in your family? When Wall Street crashed, you said it was a black day for the stock market. In fact, you renamed the whole month black. And always in the same breath that the word white is spoken, it is accompanied by the perceptions of pure and right. And when you say the word black, you attach to it the words and images of fear, ignorance, poverty, and hate. So tell me, why do you buy 10 tons of suntan oil to get as black as me? Pierce your ears with several holes. Perm your hair to imitate my curls. Steal our soulful handshakes. Award white singers who sound black, while your woman describes her ideal man as tall, dark, and handsome. As she adopts the hairstyles of braids and plaits and cornrows that you call chic and ethnic on her and militant and extreme on me, all the while winking and blinking your blue eyes at me as your tongue moistens your weak, thin lips. So tell me, why is chocolate always the favorite flavor of the month? Okay. This is called Make No Difference, but I need to change the name. But this is a sore spot with me. There are so many of us that are so successful, doing well in corporate America and otherwise, all over in this fields of science. All I want to know is, are you looking over your shoulder, making sure that there's another one that looks like you on the steps of the ladder? That's all I want to know. Okay, this is called Makes No Difference. Why doesn't having a black mayor, black school superintendent, black police commissioner make any difference in our fate? It just doesn't equate. We're still unemployed and filling the jails. Our children are dropping out before they are failed. Too frequently, complaints of police brutality file in with racism's ugly taint. And so I ask again, what difference does it make in our fate to have a black takeover? The inequities just get bolder. Is it too much to expect, or is it the super nig syndrome I detect? And I one of the biggest illusions perpetrated on black folks is having a black president. And yes, of course, I voted for Barack Obama. I think he's a classy dude, but he's black like me, so I know the reality. He couldn't do nothing for me or you. So it was all an illusion, folks. Okay. Okay. Someone might think. The Jews embrace Jews from whatever land and call them all kin. White folks have open arms for the Polish and Soviets and others with white skin. We are the only folks who reject our own, go out of our way to make the connection thin, lest someone think we're African. Okay. I think all of a sudden I'm reading my political poem. I'm on my sofa with, of course, my piles of paper around me and a few books. And my TV is on with no sound because I look up, I want to see what news is going on, and they had that, just had that awful, awful scene of that man being beaten by the police. But anyway, okay. I pledge allegiance to my people. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the African American people and to one African nation under the Creator, united and strong, uplifting the children with uncovered truth, assuring our rightful place on this earth. I pledge allegiance to my people, to give my brothers and sisters love, respect, and support, to always extend a helping hand, to network, promote, elevate, and give hope, to live and work from the perspective of we and not I, to assure that my dollar from African America it buys, to continue the tradition of extended family, community, and unity. I pledge allegiance to my people, to the benefit of all and the betterment of the world. Okay. Okay. Okay, hold on. I shouldn't tell you all this, but I actually have four pair of glasses here. Three of them are, of course, my dollar store glasses, magnifying lenses, and then one, my prescription lenses, and none, and nothing is working for me. So if I stumble over words and stuff, that's part of it. Okay, here's one I haven't read. This is called Universality. Our universality lies in our commonality of being last man on the totem pole. Okay. Okay. Still flipping pages. One day I'll get better. Oh, this is just called a vocabulary for survival. We, African Americans, brothers, sisters, extended family, community, unity, love, care, share, education, knowledge, educate, support, mentor, vote, Pan-Africanism, independent, productive, black, power, a vocabulary for survival. I'll do one more and then we'll open up the mics. Okay. This is called From Surviving to Thriving, which is the title of my first poetry book, From Surviving to Thriving, which still can be found on Amazon. Okay. We've been kidnapped, chained, beaten, burned, jailed, bombed, even turned into Uncle Toms. We've been lied to, denied school, lied about, placed under a cloud of doubt. We've been humiliated, our men emasculated, ejected, rejected, raped, made victims of hate. And the list will grow. The incidents escalate until our minds, we elevate from survive to thrive. With a history of leadership and countless accomplishments of great traditions and enormous pride, we'll move forward from surviving to a people strong and thriving. Okay. Willie or Sonia, are you there? To open the mics? Willie or Sonia? Could you open the mics? I'm not hearing anybody. Okay. I know that earlier today, before we went on the air, I was told that there was a problem from the moderator's end with cable and Wi-Fi issues. So I don't know if someone is there and able to open the line up. So let me read from this. I'll just keep reading until someone comes through. Excuse me. I'm looking at the time and I have, what time is that? Hard for me to see on this phone. It's about 7:45, so we have about 15 minutes. I was hoping we could open the phones up. And I'll do these two, and then I'm going to call. My throat is starting to get dry. I have nothing near me to drink. Okay.
Shalom.
Hello.
Good evening, Shalom.
Hello, who is this?
This is Deacon Armstrong, Willie's brother.
Oh, hi, how are you doing?
Doing well, doing well.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to listen in?
I was able to listen to a little bit of it, a lot of distraction in the background. I was having my dinner while I was listening in. You were talking about the blogger.
That's a good distraction. That's a good distraction.
It was, yeah. I'm finished now. I'm out on the porch. You had mentioned something about barbers.
About
the barber.
One more time.
Something was mentioned about black barbers.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
Now I had an opportunity, and you know, it's funny. I had an opportunity to join this. It was a museum, African American International Museum, out of Charleston,
uh-huh.
South Carolina. And they had I think they had a webinar this past weekend talking about black barbers and how they had organized. I missed the webinar, but by you mentioning that, I said these things, they all connect. They're about us and our people, and they all connect, you know. So I thought there was another show tonight.
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing every single word you're saying.
Mm-hmm. I thought there was another show on tonight, but if this show is going to be on every Monday, I'm going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, are you talking about my show or the barber webinar?
No, this show. This show that's on. This is your show?
Uh-huh. Poetry with Flavor. It's every second and fourth Monday. The second and the fourth Monday of every month.
Okay. All right. That sounds great. Okay.
Well, I appreciate the encouragement. I'm glad you tuned in.
Sure. I try to listen to a little bit of this, a little bit of that, draw my own conclusions, whatever's needed. I hold on to it, and whatever I don't need, I throw it away or put it on the back burner for later, you know. But it's interesting. And
if I was where you were, I'd be eating too.
Yeah. But thanks for having me. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Okay.
Thank you. Are
you're
there
welcome.
Do you know whether or not do you know whether or not Mr. Willie got his cable thing or Wi-Fi thing worked out?
Oh, I don't know. We live approximately an hour and a half from each other. I don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So do you know how to open up the line? You may not even be anybody on there except you, but
yeah. Well, what it is, I when I call in, I usually have the speaker on and the mute button on. Microphone's cut off. So what I did, I heard you saying you needed Willie to turn the mics on for you, so I just turned my mic on my phone.
Oh, okay. Listen, I don't have a clue about technology at any level. You know. All I know is talking on a phone.
Yeah, he usually has his the studio pulled up on his laptop, and that way he can control the microphone. Mm-hmm. But if you can't get him, apparently he's either busy or he's still having technical issues. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Yeah. Well, that's okay. But I appreciate you you talking with me and it's nice to meet you. And I'm just gonna call it evening. Is there somebody else there? I thought I heard somebody. I guess not.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I only have like 4 minutes anyway.
Right.
So I'm going to call it an evening. So you made me hungry talking about food.
Oh my God. Well, it's that time, right? Just
I'm going to make a cup of tea for my throat, and I'm going to get some dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And again, thank you for listening in.
No problem. I just had a cup of ginger root tea myself. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Don't tell me what you had to eat now, because I'm going to have to find my way over there.
Well, they were leftovers now. I'm a leftover kind of guy, so they were leftovers I'm working on. Yeah.
Hey, they always taste better.
Yeah, when they marinate from day to day. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. They do.
Right.
They do. They do. Yes. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Okay. Well, do I just hang up? I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Do you have, okay.
Well, it's only a couple of minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and call it an evening. And see you all in a couple weeks.
Okay. Be blessed.
Bye.
Okay. Shalom.